Hi, this is Jeff Johnston, host of the Living Undeterred podcast, powered by Brighton. I have a special guest today, James Oliver from Atlanta. And man, I'm really excited to have you on this podcast because the whole essence of the Living Undeterred, powered by Brighton podcast is to focus on resiliency, hope, inspiration, empathy, courage, love, and discuss what happens when you are not in those situations, when you're struggling and you're down and you feel helpless and hopeless. But with that, I'm sure we're going to get to that in a minute. Why don't you just introduce yourself real quick, a little bit of your background, and then we'll just dive into this conversation today.
Yeah, sure, man. I'm James Oliver Jr. I'm a managing partner of a new venture fund launching soon called Kabila Ventures. I'm the founder of the Kabila Founder Mental Health Fund, which provides free mental therapy for U.S.-based startup founders who want it but can't afford it. Husband to an amazing wife and co-founder of the world's cutest twins.
Awesome. What are the twins' names?
Zoe and Thaddeus. 12 years old. Be 13 in January.
Good for you, man.
Thanks.
All right. So let's just jump right into it. No beating around the bush. Founder mental health. So people really don't know what a founder is. Maybe let's just start there. Everyone knows kind of what mental health is these days, but what is the definition of a founder for the layperson out there that's not familiar with, say, the startup space or the entrepreneurial world?
Yeah, so I think I would say it's different from, at least in terms of how I use it, as from an entrepreneur. You know, when I think of founder, I'm thinking someone who's building a tech startup, something that has the potential to be a high growth, high revenue earning potential, you know, high margin business. Or tech startup founder is kind of the way I think about it when I think of founder. I'd say that.
Hmm. Well, I know we're going to talk at some point about an organization called The Real, mm-hmm. and I am a proud ambassador of The Real, as are you. And I think what really attracted me was this focus on what happens behind the scenes of anybody who's in a position of maybe a CEO or a president or, you know, a community leader. A lot of times you don't realize, hey, that person's having issues like me. And I think when we can normalize the conversation around mental health and we can share stories and be vulnerable, I think that's going to be the real first step in authentic self-awareness and in improving the lives of other people. So I guess what I would do first of all is figure out or ask you, what got you to do what you do? Obviously, there was something that happened, because I know in my life, you know, I'm here doing mental wellness advocacy, mm-hmm. because I was dealt some pretty unfortunate cards in my life. A lot of it I had control over that I just mismanaged. And what got you to where you're at, man? Something had to happen in your life that you figured, hey, I know I'm going to, my legacy is going to be helping other people.
Yeah. So before I answer that question, I want to say that we are aligned with respect to normalizing these conversations. I mean, I just posted on LinkedIn a few minutes ago. I have, you know, founders and investors recording short videos for me just talking about their mental wellness journey and why that matters to them. Because, you know, I see that there's still a stigma around these conversations, especially for founders. And, you know, I have a lot of founders in my ecosystem, and I talk to founders all the time. And, you know, almost to a person, and if you look at the data, as you know, 70% of startup founders are struggling with their mental health. They're all having a hard time, but when you toss out an opportunity like I do every week, hey, we're going to pay for mental therapy, all you got to do is go here, the first one that fills it out can do it. Mm-hmm. They're real shy about getting the help or come up with these convenient excuses for why, oh, it's not for me, let somebody else get them. Like, bro, I just got the phone with you. Like, what are you talking about? You're out to lunch, bro. Like, you should be the first one to raise your hand for this joint. So we're aligned with that. And I'm also writing a book with some partner with this really fascinating young man, Django Degree. He's got a startup called Focus on Words. It's an AI tool that he will interview you and take that interview and turn it into a book. It's remarkable. So we're going to have founders and investors contribute stories to the book. I love the fact that I'm writing a book without actually having to write a book, because I'm not doing all the chapters. It's great. but the whole point of the book, I'll show you offline the title and the first draft of the cover. It is chef's kiss, man. You're going to freaking love it.
I love it.
And the person right in my forge, you're going to be like, oh, man, that's so fire. So, and all the proceeds for that book are going to go back to benefit the Kabila Founding Mental Health Fund. So that's coming soon. We're actually going to be doing like a are you old enough to remember Jerry Lewis?
Oh, heck yeah. I'm 59.
Bro, we're going to be doing like a Jerry Lewis style telethon on LinkedIn to raise money for the foundation, the nonprofit, and to promote the book. So we're going to be working on that. That's going to be exciting. That's more to come about that pretty soon. But to answer your question, though, man, yeah, like you, man, I've been through it, you know, in some ways still going through it. Everybody I freaking talk to these days.
I know.
Is going through something. You know, and I think it would serve us all well if we remembered that and we had a little bit more grace for people. I have a really bad ADHD, so I kind of bounce around a little bit. So just hang with me, please.
I do too. So welcome. Welcome to the club.
You know, one of the things that I noticed that, you know, I'm not going to say it irritates me, but it's too strong of a word, but I just wish there was more grace. I see a lot of people who purport to hold space for startup founders, but they don't remember that, you know, sometimes, you know, founders are dealing with stuff and they can't always show up as their best selves. And I don't see all the time grace for that. So I would just ask, if you're out there listening and you're an investor, you run an accelerator, whatever, you know, just sometimes a founder, you know, they might not have wanted to get out of bed that morning because they just got told no like 1,000 times yesterday. And, you know, they're trying to figure out how they're going to pay their rent or their mortgage or feed their kids or whatever it is, you know, these challenges that founders go through. I mean, a lot of people go through that, but I think that pressure is really acute for startup founders. So to your question. So I'll tell you a little bit of a story. I'll try to make it short if I can. So back in 2012, I cleaned out my savings to launch my first startup. It was called WeMontage. And it was going to be the world's only website that let you turn your digital images into removable photo wallpaper. It was a brilliant product. Cleaned out my savings. I'm a non-technical founder. $35,000 to build an alpha version of a website. And after that, you know, now, you know, there's babies on the way,
right? Yeah.
Twins, IVF, two embryos, twins coming. And I'm like, holy crap. So I knew that the only chance I had to get my startup going was to get into an accelerator. And accelerator is, if you don't know, is a place you go where they put you through like a 12-week crash course on how to build a startup, connect you to resources, to potential investors, you know, the things that you will need to have a successful launch. They take a little equity in the business, plug you into their network. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So I was living, I'm from New York, from Brooklyn. I was living in Northeast Wisconsin, a small town called Neenah, which is right near Appleton, both of which are 30 miles south of Green Bay, 1,000 miles away from friends and family. And so, you know, I applied to Generator, and this was going to be their second cohort. And it was down in Madison, which was a 2-hour drive each way. So I got into the accelerator right before, you know, the accelerator was supposed to start. Got news that we had to watch my son's blood flow because it looked like it was going to start going backward. And if it started going backward, we would have to do an emergency C-section. Otherwise, he would die. So 2 days before the accelerator started. So the accelerator started was like first week in January. The kids were supposed to be born end of March. Accelerator was over first week in April. I'm like, okay, cool. The timing of this all works out, right?
Right.
But, you know, I guess God had different plans. So 2 days before the accelerator started, we had to do an emergency C-section because my son's blood was going backward. So we had to deliver the children 3 months prematurely.
Wow.
They weighed 2 pounds each. My daughter was 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 ounces. My son was 1 pound, 14 ounces. Like, wow. I never forget, like, I got pictures and my son fit in my hand, you know.
That's tiny, yeah.
Really, really small. So I'm 1,000 miles away from friends and family. I got a 2-hour drive each way to the accelerator. I'm back and forth to the NICU. I'm out of money. I am grinding my ass off. Waking up at 2 a.m. every morning from the stress of it all. My face was breaking out like crazy. I felt like I was doing some kind of Benjamin Buttons or reverse Benjamin Buttons. I don't know. Bro, like you could have said good morning, James, and I just would have started crying. I mean, just it was brutal.
Yeah.
So I remember the day before, no, the day of demo day, I was about to go on stage and I got a call from one of the angel groups we pitched. And he's like, hey, we're going to fill your round. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I don't take anything for granted. You got to tell me what the hell you mean.
Right.
What do you mean? So yeah, we're going to give you $250,000. I was only raising $250,000 back then, which is nothing really.
Yeah.
But it was everything at that time. And I just like, after everything I've been through, I just kind of dropped to my knees and I cried. I thank God. And so we raised that money, raised a little bit more. The kids came home from the NICU, my daughter after 6 weeks, my son after 10 weeks, you know, he was tethered to machines and oxygen. I mean, that machine was like beeping all the time and waking me up at night. I still think to this day, I have PTSD. I can't stand to be, you know, awakened at night.
I bet.
Like my wife, you know, I had sleep apnea, so I had this CPAP, and I like to sleep on my back. But when I do, I start snoring, and my wife was always like giving me the business, you know? And I get mad about it. I just really grumpy. And thankfully, you know, we're at a place now. She understands. She doesn't get mad at me, but she used to get upset. Like, why are you so mean? And I'm just like, I'm sorry. Like, that was a very traumatic experience for me. So fast forward a little bit. You know, we ran out of money. Everybody quit. And I was working on that thing on my own. And I never forget Have you ever had an investor tell you to your face that they don't want to throw good money after bad?
Not in those exact terms, but
you get
the delayed, you know, responses mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. stuff you kind of, it means the same thing. They just don't say it that way.
Yeah. Well, I was under the impression they were going to, you know, continue supporting us, and we had got our first Today Show segment, which is great. And we made some money from that. And I mean, I got on my own. I got my startup on the Today Show 3 times. Good Morning America, Martha Stewart's blog, Money Magazine did a phenomenal article, came out to the house, did a great video. On and on. I did all that without a publicist. So we ran out of money. I thought we were going to get more money. We didn't. He told me, he's like, I'm not going to throw good money after bad. Oh boy. Ouch. Right. So I'm like, all right. And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, I think it's mostly fortunately, but I think it's a blessing and a curse that I am in the 99th percentile of persistent and resilient people on the planet. And I say a lot now that just because I'm resilient AF doesn't mean I always want to have to be.
Yeah, follow you.
Because it's freaking exhausting.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I kept grinding, man. You know, I remember I started a blog called Trap Life Dad at the time, and I was like, well, now that I'm a parent, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm working from home, taking care of my kids. It was hard. I'm like, I'm learning a lot. I'm going to create this blog and one day write a book to inspire parentpreneurs around the world to be the best parent and entrepreneur they can be. All of this was just grinding my mental health to a bloody pulp. You know, in retrospect, I was functionally depressed. And, you know, at one point I got an email or call from that same investor. He said, hey, you know, we like your leadership. We want to give you another $100,000. I'm like, all right, that's great. Like, I'll take it because I got some things I want to do to try to fix this thing. But it was too late. Like, everybody was gone. It was just me. I had to hire an agency. And it's like, okay, I could pay myself a couple dollars a month to contribute to the household, et cetera. But anyway, long story short, so I ended up writing a book called The More You Hustle, The Luckier You Get. You Can Be a Successful Parentpreneur. Some people say it's the realest book about entrepreneurship they ever read. It's available on Amazon. It's interesting that I named it that, but today I think hustle culture is trash. I think it's toxic.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't think it's good. So my startup failed, man, and went through a lot. Kid's mom, you know, filed for divorce. You know, my business was struggling. I was not doing well mentally. Filed for divorce. It wasn't until, honestly, like, what's this, 2025? The last 3 years, 4 years, maybe, did I realize I was functionally depressed. And I remember I said I started that journey in 2012, right?
Yeah. I respect that. As I'm listening to your story, I'm sure a lot of people that are in the founder world are listening as well. And I just resonate back with a lot of what you were saying, I go back in my life and I look at how things were going pretty good until our oldest son died from a drug overdose in 2016. And, you know, at the time I was running a wealth management firm. I had a TV show, had a radio show, happily married, three boys, you know, checking all the boxes. I call it now the illusion of success. I thought I was happy. I thought I was successful, but I really wasn't. And Seth's whole journey started with an Adderall prescription when he was 15. And then 8 years later, he unfortunately ran into fentanyl. So, you know, that you lose a child. And if that doesn't find a way to humble you. And, yeah. And then 5 years after that, my wife drank herself to death. So I lost half from 50 to 55 when a lot of, you know, my male peers were out getting second homes and posting all their trips to Europe and how great their kids are graduating college. You know, I'm burying half my family and my family almost buried me. And, you know, what an odd time to walk away from a very lucrative investment career that I could have just basically written my own checks because I owned 60% of the company. And then go into this startup space knowing I'm a high touch CEO. I'm not a high tech CEO. I have a co-founder who's built the AI and done the whole thing with our app. But I'm sitting there going, my story's different than yours, but there's those same similar pain points, you know, the sleepless nights, the funding this. Mostly my first year and a half was all my own money. And then we found some investors that believed in us and we grew. And so, yeah, anybody out there who's in this space, James, I think it's important that when you're in bed and it's hard to get up in the morning, that there's millions of other startup founders and CEOs and coaches and athletic directors and people that are in positions of authority that are going through this turmoil. And I think what I'm loving about your story and Sean's and everybody I've met at The Real, which I do want to talk about that in a few minutes, is this idea of being vulnerable, especially for men. There is a very unfortunate dichotomy in regards to the startup space. When a man shows vulnerability, investors look at that as a weakness. And so that's a stigma, I think, that you and I and Sean's publicly, I'm talking about Sean Lesser, of course, publicly talked about his mental health breakdown. You've shared yours. I haven't really shared mine publicly a lot, but people know when you bury a son and your wife,
I can't.
Who wouldn't have a mental health breakdown? You know, I'm not a cyborg. I'm human.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I applaud what you're doing, man. I think this is why I wanted to get you on the show, is to have other people. Yeah, you don't have to be a founder. I think that's what our topic is today. But anybody out there, you could be a teacher. You could be a janitor, you could be a mechanic. I mean, it doesn't really matter. You don't have to be in a position of authority to have pain and suffering.
That's right.
But I think what you've done out of it, what I'm trying to do out of it, what Sean's done out of it, is testament, is proof, is evidence that, you know, despite the worst circumstances that can befall somebody, that you can come out of it on the other side, at least crawling and scraping and trying to improve your life. And then ultimately get to a point where you can say, hey, I'm proud of myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm batting 1,000 every time I've gotten knocked down, I've gotten up again.
Yeah, man, that's great. I appreciate everything you just said there. And I don't see how you were able to pick yourself up after all that. So God bless you, man. And, you know, bless your son and your wife. That's just really hard.
Yeah, it is. But that's where the genesis of the motivation comes from, to give back. And so I struggled for a couple of years. I think after Seth died and even after my wife died in 2021, I was kind of just floating out there. I immersed myself in advocacy as a way to mask my pain. And I found that, you know, just as of recently, that there are some challenges I'm having with almost becoming too much of an advocate, that there's no separation. There's no ability for me to go anywhere. Because here's the question I dread at any event I'm at. What do you do, Jeff? And I'm like, oh my God, here I go. I'm gonna be talking to this person for 4 hours. They're probably gonna get sick of me, walk away. Here comes that guy that lost half his family that's gonna be talking about his app. And I'm like, so it's like I struggle with that. I wanna talk about what happened, because if I don't, then they really die. I wanna keep their spirit alive.
Right.
But I don't wanna be that guy where everyone just sees, oh, here comes Jeff with this heavy story, you know, watch out for him because he's gonna share it. Where's the balancing act with all that?
Oh, I hope that's a rhetorical question. I have no
I don't have an answer.
Not for that. I mean, yeah. So I hate small talk. I am an ambivert, but I don't, you know, I hate small talk. What do you do? I'm just like, you know, look, I'm also Gen X. I'm cynical AF, right? And just like, I was like, why do you care? It's like, yeah. Why? If I tell you, what are you going to do about it? Just right. Like, are you going to help? Are you going to, you know, invest in my venture fund? Are you going to support my nonprofit? Like, why do you care? So the way I introduce myself when you ask me, I actually did a workshop. You know, I have my LinkedIn Live show that I do, and I have one of my friends who's she's actually going to be the new managing director for TechStars Atlanta, came on and talked about, like, for founders, like, when an investor asks you, so tell me what you do, we talked about how to answer that question. And the way you asked me to introduce myself, somebody asked me what I do, that's my answer, right? I'm working on this thing, I work on that thing, husband of an amazing wife, co-founder of World's Cutest Twins. You know, the last two things, the last thing especially is remarkable, is memorable. You don't expect somebody to say something like that, and the conversation can, now we can have a more human interaction versus all the transactional nature of the things, because I don't like being transactional. Although I feel like these days a lot of people force me to be that way, because when they show up a certain way, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put you in this box over here, and now I'm going to decide if I want to play with you or not.
Right.
So.
So I'm curious. Tell me about your VC fund.
Well, to not run afoul of SEC rules too much.
Yeah, just the broad strokes.
Yeah, so we're going to be, it's a pre-seed fund. We'll be investing in Overlook founder teams. And the reason we're doing that is because data is pretty clear. You know, when you have teams for people from various backgrounds, historically they've given investors a greater return. So really leaning into that. And my, you know, my secret sauce is that I have access, you know, because of my relationships with investors, accelerators, also went to TechStars, and just, you know, thousands of founders in my network from the various things that I've done, the communities that I've built. So really leaning into that, and, you know, the really great deal flow I'll have. So that's what I'm doing. But it's hard right now raising money because of the macroeconomic environment. People don't feel as wealthy, even though they are making money, but all the volatility and uncertainty and the craziness going on, it's just been harder. So actually, the fact that that's been hard, but I say this because, you know, I do have a therapist and I do talk to them and I learn some skills. I have some tools for my mental health toolkit, some of which are, you know, compartmentalization. What a beautiful thing that is when you know how to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, everything around you is on fire. You're like, ah, it's cool. I'm over here focused on that because I can't do squat about those things over there. Let me control the things I can control. And that's another thing I learned. So that's what I do with that. But so one of the things that I intend to do with my venture fund is to provide, as a founder value add, is to provide access to mental wellness resources. So I'm like, okay, this other thing is really hard right now, but what can I do? I can go ahead and spin up a nonprofit to provide mental health resources to founders. So what I do, I reached out to Brad Feld. Brad's a legendary investor, co-founder of TechStars. He's a partner at Foundry Group. And you can go Google him. He's legendary. Good friend. Mm-hmm. Brad's a good friend. I met Brad and David. David Cohn's now CEO of TechStars. Met those guys when I was in Generator. They popped in for a Google Hangout. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And I just stayed in touch because back then Brad was blogging like crazy. And I just followed his blog. Again, not transactionally, not sure. Like, oh, I want something from you. Can you grade me? I didn't want anything from them dudes. I was just like, this is great. Just always engaging, kind. And then one day out the blue, like, I got an email from him because he's a voracious reader. He's like, I read your book. I freaking loved it. I'm going to write about it on my blog. I'm like, whoa, that's cool, right? So that brings me to another unrelated point. But I think it's a good point if anybody out there is listening as a founder. Like, this startup thing, this thing is a multi-turn game. You can't be transactional. You can't be, hopefully you can't. If you can't curse, you can bleep that out.
No, you're good.
But you got to be a good human, man, and build relationships and build your community and your tribe and your network before you need it. So, you know, Brad, those guys, like, I mean, Brad gave me the grant to start the Gavila Foundation Health Fund. Before that, he gave me a grant after George Floyd was murdered to start the Parentpreneur Foundation. That was a nonprofit. We were helping Black parents who are entrepreneurs. Did some incredible work there. In fact, it was through that work. But we pay for 400 mental therapy sessions. And I don't know if you know much about the Black community, but Black folk don't go to the therapist, bro.
Yeah.
That's not what we do. Mm-hmm. We go to the pastor, right? Pastor. What? It's a lot of stigma in the Black community for various reasons, some of which are legitimate.
Yeah.
But it's just not what we do. But I had that community trained, man. Whenever we dropped the type form, you know, we got 5 slides this week. Bam, that thing was full. People reporting back, testimonials, how this helped them. People still talking about that. I'm like, okay, this is a thing that I need to like double and triple down on. So I'm like, okay, I can do that. So I just got that spun up right now, and I'm working on that. And, you know, meeting some really amazing people like yourself and Sean. And I'm like, okay, I think this is going to be a way that I will, in fact, raise my fund. But it's going to take longer. But just being human, having authentic conversations with people who are interested in mission and values and vision aligned, who also might have the capacity to do something. So I'm just leaning into that, and at the same time, like really making a difference, helping a lot of founders. It's awesome, man.
Well, I love what you're doing. I mean, you look at the space, and you look at the amount of when I first started Brighton, it would be about two and a half, three years. You know, the preventative mental wellness space was kind of on the back door. Everybody was talking telehealth. Everyone was talking, you know, therapy, things like that. And I was always thinking to myself, you know, as Desmond Tutu said, we need to stop pulling people out of the river. We need to move further upstream, find out why they're falling in the first place. And that really resonated with me when I was thinking about what the Brighton like lane wanted to be. So we went really heavy into pre-treatment prevention. So we're prior to the need for telehealth. Man, what we just are finding out now, I don't know if you just saw the post that we shared on our Slack channel today about the Reddit's co-founder that just invested a bunch of money in an app very similar to Brighton. I won't say the name of it.
Talking about Alexis?
No, they're a preventative AI-driven.
Talking about Alexis Ohanian or somebody else?
I didn't catch the name of the guy. I just saw it on our Slack channel, but the reason it was put in there was to show encouragement that the capital is starting to come into the prevention pre-treatment lane, because, you know, if the telehealth was working as good as it was working, supposed to be 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, you would start to see some of these numbers getting better. But the problem is, just like with diagnosis of SSRIs and all this stuff, things aren't getting better. I mean, most statistics, 5-year rolling averages, 10-year rolling averages, maybe overdose from fentanyl, ironically, is the only thing that's actually dropped. But that could be a lot of reasons that have nothing to do with mental health. But I guess I'm thinking of your thoughts of the opportunities in the prevention and pre-treatment like space as on the continuum of mental wellness, not to compete. To replace.
Yeah.
But on the continuum, because you need to have both.
Yeah, no, look, man. So one of the things with the book that I'm writing, and I'm not going to share the name yet, but, you know, I'm like, I want people to come in with all different perspectives on this thing, because I'm not trying to come here and be prescriptive about this is the only thing you got to do. No.
Right.
It's not. And this ain't the only way to do it. And yeah, not for nothing, help them from so they don't fall in the damn water, right? How can we do that? Like you said, first having to pull them out the water. And even, you know, it's not that everybody's in the water, but it's just good to have some resources for your mental toolkit is a whole different approach. So, I love that. I think that's cool. Alexis is interesting. I would love to actually have him contribute to my book if anybody out there knows him, because I know he's one of the few VCs who actually, when he writes a check, he allocates a portion of that investment for founder mental wellness. Hmm. And I want to give a shout out to my wife. So I got married. We got married in 2023, so we're kind of coming up with 2 years here. And my wife is the most the most self-aware person I know, and she has the best mental health hygiene out of anybody I know. So I'm just thankful that I was, you know, well enough to get my crap together. And you know, funny thing, like with my wife, when I met her, I just got divorced. Like I think we signed the docs in May 2018. I met her on Bumble in July of 2018, you know, and, you know, I was very transparent with her, very open. But like the thing about her, like, oh, first of all, I was very angry. It was a very, you know, contentious situation. And it's still like super toxic. Just the co-parent situation is just not good. Mm-hmm. But the thing about my wife is that she saw me for who I really was and who I really could be through the fog of all of that. So I just want to like give her a shout out. She'd probably listen to this and just like thank her for that. And I still, you know, I thank her to this day. She's amazing.
No, that's awesome. And I did check. It is Alexis, by the way.
Okay.
Alexis. Mm-hmm. he was the individual. But yeah, I just, you know, going back to the capital, I know Sean's really excited about this $10 billion, like trying to get into this
space. I had
space.
Him on my show last week. I don't know if you saw that.
I'm going to call it. He's next. So I'm like I said, we just started our show, and Ben, my producer here, he's a finance major at Iowa. He's a junior, and he's the one that kind of set this up with you, but I kind of gave him a hit list of people I wanted to get on the show, and you're at the top of my list. Cause you and I really never had a chance to really have this, you know, this deep dialogue like this today.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you a question. Where do you see the opportunities that AI is bringing to the table when it comes to mental wellness? Because before you answer that, I want to tell you a scenario that has come up that we hear a lot from people when we talk with. And this is an article, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal or wherever. Yeah, I think you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Where this individual named Sophie, I think, was really struggling with her mental health. And she went to Chad and asked to like draft a suicide letter to like be empathetic with her parents. And it did it. And I think, you know, that certainly is an outlier situation. The analogy I use is with electric cars. I mean, when that first came out, there was crashes. People did unfortunately die. Yeah. And we didn't just stop electric cars because you kind of knew it was going to be coming. Well, AI is the same way. So your thoughts on how AI can be an ally in the mental health, mental wellness fight, and also the challenges that AI, and again, I look at AI as two separate things. I look at AI that's I call it out in the wild, wild west, okay? Or AI that's in the confounds of an app like Brighton, where it's end-to-end encryption, a private server, things like that, where it's trained differently. It's like, the story I use with people is you have two dogs. You have a pit bull on a leash on the front yard barking and yelling at everybody. And then you have a pit bull trained by loving parents and loved and nurtured. And they're two pit bulls, but one's really nice with humans, the other isn't. I think AI kind of that way, depending on how the AI is trained and where it is confined.
Yeah. So I'm going to, you know, caveat my comments by simply saying, you know, I don't know a lot about this. What I do know is based on some reading about it that I've done.
Okay.
And based on the limited reading about it that I've done, my takeaway is that generative AI can be problematic. And unless it's, and again, this is based on what I read. I don't know if things changed. This was just a couple weeks ago, whatever. But if it's not based on, was it CBT? Was it cognitive behavioral theory?
Yep, CBT, social emotional learning, empathetic listening. Those are all areas that you need to train it on.
Yeah, so if it's not restricted to that, it could be problematic. It could take people down rabbit holes that cause them to be in a worse situation than they started out in. And that's problematic naturally. So that's my thought about that.
No, I think it's interesting because I look at even prior to AI, there was many instances where people had bad appointments with their therapist or they had bad reactions to their SSRI. So it's like when people say, oh, AI did this, I'm like, well, but prior to this, we also had problems in the system that was accepted by mainstream society.
You could go get a therapist and you might have a horrible experience with a therapist.
That's what
right?
I'm saying. Yeah.
I had one. This lady told me how I was arrogant because I'm like, first of all, like my mental health's in the trash and I'm talking to you, right? And I'm like struggling to get out of freaking bed.
Right.
And I got to figure out a way forward. And I'm just telling you that I'm trying to build something. And because based on my experience, I prefer to talk to decision makers. I mean, I have I'm from Brooklyn, so I got a very smart ass way of saying things sometimes. So the thing I say, I don't talk to minions. I only talk to bosses. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous. It's funny, but if you've ever done what you're doing and what I'm doing, you get it, right? And you know that if you're going to talk to people who can't make decisions, you're wasting your time. So based on that, she was like, you're so arrogant. I'm like, you know, goodbye. So
I'm surprised that she would call you that personally, you know? I mean, but yeah.
There was a time I was arrogant, but that was before life beat the crap out of me.
You know, there's something to say about getting humbled. I kind of look back at myself too, when I thought I knew it all. And then life comes in and takes away somebody you love and then it again. And then you realize that the things you thought were important in your life aren't. You get humbled very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever come back in regards to if people see me now, I'm 50 pounds lighter than I was before Seth died. Cause I was an alcoholic for 32 years.
Damn.
I was a high functioning alcoholic, 6-7 days a week. And when he died, after about a year and a half, I decided that I looked at my wife one night and I said, man, she's 9 years younger than me and she looks 9 years older than me just in a matter of like a year.
Wow.
And I looked in the mirror on December 24th of 17, James, and this is a true story, after 32 years of drinking. And I said, dude, you couldn't save your son. The least you can do is stop drinking for your wife. I've never had a drop since. It's been going on 8 years. It's the easiest thing ever done in my life, but it didn't work. And my wife, when she died, it was alcoholism, was on her death certificate, but it was grief, prescription pills, all that stuff. Oh, my point I'm saying is that in a way there was a liberation of myself. Like I was freed of being the miserable Jeff who had it all, you mm-hmm. know, the big house, fast car and all that, but I wasn't really a happy in my soul.
Mm-hmm.
I just filled things with things. Every time I was needing something, I would go buy something.
Yeah.
And then, you know, death comes in and takes two people you care about. You know, you have one of two choices, man. You can become a better human being or you become a bitter human being. And I went bitter initially.
Well,
and then this thing clicked in me and said, dude, you're not that old.
Yeah.
I'm 59 now. So this all happened when I was in my mid 50s. I want to live to be 100. My dad's 93. So there's no reason why 100? I can't live to be 100.
Bro, check me out at 85, man. I'm good.
Well, it depends what my state of mind is in my body. But,
right.
You know, the way 85 is like, you know, it's not that super old anymore.
It depends what you're looking at. I don't know.
It depends who didn't take care of themselves. But no, I think there's valuable lessons in all of our journeys, you know. And I applaud what you're doing and how you're sharing it and the mental health that you're helping founders with is, I don't know of anyone doing exactly what you're doing at the scale you're doing it. So
yeah there's no one. There's no one. I mean, I see a lot of people talking about it, but even the people who purport to be doing something about it, they're just talking.
Well, I think the challenge is, and you know it, when you're a founder and you're at these conferences, you have to be unflappable. You have to show utmost strength. If I'm walking around the hall crying to everybody and telling them I miss my son, I miss my wife.
Yeah,
they're gonna stay away from me like I'm toxic.
1,000%. But also, look, man, so this is why I'm having investors contribute to the book, because look, you have to find people who your values aligned with. Period. Right. I'm not gonna go try to get a check from somebody who's not aligned with my thesis. Like that would be silly. But I also understand. Look, it's so nuanced, right? I get what you're saying, but this is why you have to keep banging the drum. Sean, me, we all have to keep banging the drum. Normalize these conversations. It's okay. It's actually a sign of strength, because how can you expect to give an entrepreneur or founder a check and for them to go kill it, provide outsized returns, if their mental health is trash?
Right.
It's not even a reasonable expectation, in my opinion.
Right.
It's just not. So if an investor, you know, has a problem with that, you know, maybe you should go find a different investor. Not all money is good money, man. It's just not.
I remember early in our journey, before we just had a pitch deck, we had no contract signed. Now we have like almost 600,000 of ARR in contract signed and we're still pre-seed.
Amazing.
But I remember last March of 24, a really good friend of mine in the wealth management business, I'll just say his name. It's Omani Carson with Carson Wealth Management. And I was pitching the idea to him, and he's in Omaha right now, and he's a very well-connected person. And I remember him saying to me, he goes, Jeff, we're going to invest. Our family office is going to invest in you, but I'm investing in you. I don't really even need to see much of what you have built or what you are building, but this investment is in you. And that was like the best check I've ever received. And actually a lot of our angel investors, even our VC fund that is invested in us, they said pretty much the same thing. You know, I like your resiliency, the fact you've rebounded from losing half your family.
Yeah, man.
If you can do that, you can do this.
1,000,000%.
I think there is a lot of truth to that, but I have to be careful oversharing as well.
No, you do. You have to find a balance. But back to your your question, I was like, is that what was that I asked you? If it was what kind of question was that? A rhetorical question?
Yeah.
I can't answer that question, but you're smart enough to know that. And look, at the earliest stages, they're investing in the jockey, not the horse. But you know, the problem is, as like an overlook founder, as a Black founder, you know, we have these different challenges sometimes where I felt like, you know, I recently went through another accelerator, I went through Techstars a couple years ago. And I felt like, you know, some of these investors, you know, they were looking down my damn horse's throat with a flashlight. I'm like, yo, I'm a super dope jockey over here. Woo-hoo, look at me. And they're like, all down, oh, that horse got a cavity back there. I'm like, bro, it's not the horse, it's the jockey, right?
Yeah.
So, but that's another thing. But if we could pivot for a second to the real Founder Mental Health Fund with Sean and Ambassadors. And I think I met Sean through a friend, Mark, here in Atlanta. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And I set up a time to talk. So I'm like, okay, cool, I'm in. So I just did my third walk this weekend. For the last two, my wife and my two kids came. And I just love that my kids are getting exposed to this stuff and meeting other people. And we're normalizing conversations around mental wellness. And this past week was fantastic because, so I live in Johns Creek, Georgia area. So I'm the Johns Creek Alpharetta Ambassador. And it's this beautiful park, Newtown Park. And along the trail, they have like exercise equipment, kind of. Like they got like a pull-up bar. So we walk past the pull-up bar. I need to see it, thankfully, because I can't do any pull-ups. But we get to the dip bar. And I'm like, all right, we're going to stop right here. And we want to see who can do how many dips. So that was awesome, man. We got that on video. You know, I'm 55, you know, a bunch of old dudes like me. We were getting the dips in, man. You know, my son was up there getting them in. And there was another, like some push-up bars down on the floor. So we're doing push-ups, and my daughter got down, did 30 push-ups, man. We got all this on video. It's fantastic.
I know. There's just, there's something really authentic with the real and the movement, and the men I'm meeting in that group are so, you know, they're leaders in their own specific industries and their lanes, but you feel this common bond when you're on those calls every month and you have those little breakout sessions and you just have like these strangers you're meeting. I call it speed friending. Matter of fact, I'm the one that came up with that term for Sean, so I should get a royalty on that.
I love it.
To me, it was like speed dating, which I've never done, but I called it speed friending. You just got thrown into a room with four or five people. You just introduced, you said what's going on in your life, personal, what's going on professional, then you kind of share. And I'm like, man, there's just something about the connective aspect of the human experience that's so powerful. And that's the one thing AI will never replace. However, AI can certainly be a bridge or a tether to those times when you're in between sessions with a human, or you can't reach your teacher, or you can't reach your mom and dad because it's 2 a.m. on Tuesday night and they're sleeping and you can't sleep. So that's, I think, the beauty for me of where AI, especially on our app, what we're finding with the metrics we have coming in, the numbers we have coming in, is that people aren't looking at this as a replacement to the human experience, but looking at it for when they can't have the human experience, this does replace it, that gap.
So I actually am, you know, look, we need to raise more money. So we're actually raising another $80,000 now to help another 150 founders. I mean, so far, I think we're about like giving like 30 grand. We've been doing this for a couple of months. We do like 1 week.
Yeah.
You know, doing some for these tech startups founders and stuff, but I want to start scaling it up. It's like a startup, right? So I started this thing up and I got into, figured out how to just do this thing, kind of spit and chewing gum, super inefficient, very tedious. And, you know, now I've gone back and I'm with the BetterHelp people and, you know, so I'm getting on this different platform and got them to agree to do that, thank God, because I really had to finesse my way to make, because I really not, quote unquote, qualified from a size of what we're doing standpoint. But I got it done because I'm a good founder, right? You figure out how to get shit done, right?
Yeah,
but getting on this platform now means I'll be able to scale up more efficiently and have better metrics, a whole backend dashboard, which is great for fundraising and show results, impact, all that. I forgot where I was going with that
because
I have really bad ADHD. but look, all I want to say is, you know, I would love for you to, so I have a LinkedIn Live show. I'd love for you to come on, man. Let's talk about what you're building. Let's address the question that you just asked me about the AI and all this stuff. Where I was going, because I always remember eventually, is I do want to provide additional resources like that. Because like, look, man, if my appointment with my therapist is not until next month, I still got stuff going on. I still need maybe some help.
Right.
So, you know, I would love to talk with you about this like offline, to see if there's a space for what we're doing with that.
I know the partnerships we're forging right now are innovators in this space, just like you. And we're finding, and this is honest, and this isn't trying to be like a sales pitch for Brighton, but we fit in about any platform, because the fact that we are prior to when people have these issues. And then if someone is struggling, we have off ramps where we can get them help. So we're trying to find collaborative efforts or partnerships with, say, a telehealth organization where we can possibly somebody's struggling on our app and they need help and we don't provide it because we're not telehealth. Right. But I certainly don't want to just leave that person hanging.
Nah, you know? Not at all. Yeah, well, let's talk more about this offline. We got to raise some more money. But we will. You know, my vision is, if there's any startup founder, we're focused on US-based founders. If they want help, I just want to have a place where they could go, just answer a couple questions. It's a self-attestation that you can't afford it because this is a nonprofit.
Yeah.
You can't be giving this stuff away for people with millions of dollars in the bank, right?
Sure, I understand. Yep.
You know, so you just answer a couple questions, you meet the criteria, boom, and you know, here, we got you. Like, that's my vision, is to make that available for everybody. But, you know, we're not there right now. Right now, we're one a week, and we're doing 60 Techstars founders for the next 12 months, and until we can raise some more money. Yeah, we will. Damn right.
With your energy, it's just going to happen.
It's too important. Because it's not just about the founder. It's not just about the startup. It's not about a return on capital for investor. It's about the founder's family.
Yeah.
How they show up in the community, which translates to how we show up in this country and in the world, right? It just expands out from the individual.
Well, you know the statistic, I'm sure you do, that there's 909 good people that die every day in the United States from the deaths of despair, alcohol, overdose, and suicide. 909 families got the call I got twice, James. Okay, think about this for a minute. That's a death statistic, right? You don't have to have death in the family to have destruction and devastation, because I'm living proof of that. We were having major problems systemically in the foundation of our family when Seth was struggling. So I quote the death statistic because it's the one that catches people's attention. But most families that I talk with, 99% of them, don't have anyone in their family that have died from this stuff. But they have somebody in their family or their immediate family that is in the midst of struggling that could potentially die.
Yeah, or just make it more basic, we all know people that we talk to every day who are functionally depressed.
Yeah, every day. Every day.
Every day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, brother, this has been great. I'm really happy we talked. I do value you as a brother, honestly, being a part of the ambassador program.
Same, bro.
How do people reach you? What's the best way to get in touch with you if they want to find out more about what you do or obtain? Yeah. You mentioned a book and things like that. So
yeah, so you can follow me on LinkedIn. I'm James Oliver Jr., James Oliver Jr. You send me a connection request, please add a note and say, hey, I heard you on Jeff's podcast. We'd love to connect with you on LinkedIn. Please do that, because I'm a bit of a LinkedIn snob. I just, you know, these random connection requests.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as you accept them, they're sliding your DMs with some nonsense. I'm just like, bro, like,
yeah.
No. So if they don't put a note and I don't know them, I don't even accept it. So I try to be more intentional about building relationships on LinkedIn. So make it quality over quantity.
Yeah.
So please, if you connect with me there, James Oliver Jr., just add a note. Hey, heard you on the podcast. Love what you're doing. Love to connect. Boom. Say less. You can learn more about the Kabila Founder Mental Health Fund. You go to visit go.joinkabila.com/therapy. That will take you to our FlipCause landing page, which is a video and details about what we're doing, some testimonials. And so I actually named the grants after my grandmother, Carmen Reed, so that the Carmen Reed Mental Health, Founder Mental Health Grants, I named them after her because she was, my grandmother's Panamanian. She was an entrepreneur. She got married to my grandfather. He was in the military. He was in Panama. He left the military, moved to Missouri. She moved to the United States. So she's a black immigrant entrepreneur seamstress with an accent. He was abusing her physically. And at one point he was out of the house. He didn't know. She took my mother and my grandmother, packed up and left and moved to New York and was living in a house with all these other similar women, you know, working as a seamstress, managed to save up her money and bought a brownstone in Brooklyn. From the pressure of it all, she died from a stroke, really bad stroke, in her early 50s, and I never got to meet her. But she's like an inspiration to me, and I just wonder if she had access to apps like Brighton and access to a mental therapist, you know, would she still be around? And you know, I always felt like she was looking after me.
Yeah,
you know, so I had to continue her legacy. I named the mental health grants after my grandmother.
Well, you are an inspiration to me, man. So thank you very much for being on the show. Really appreciate it. And we'll have all your contact information when we post this live.
Okay.
But, love you, man. Keep
same, bro.
Keep doing what you're doing, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate y'all.
You bet.